If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air, everybody. Alex, how are you doing? Long time no speak.
Yeah, it's funny because we didn't have, obviously, last week's episode due to Easter. And if you were unaware as a listener as to why the episode wasn't in your feeds, you just had to head over to Instagram to see quickly the reminder that there wouldn't have been one last week due to the Easter break. But we are back. Good to hear from you. Good to speak with you as ever. I know you've been extremely busy globetrotting again.
Yeah.
And I'm here. I've put the kettle on and I'm just ready to sit and listen, really.
Well, yeah, I was very grateful that it was Easter last week because time was very limited. I've been traveling with my friends in Thailand and Vietnam. It's quite an experience traveling with, because I've been friends with them since I was 9. So since then, we've kind of taken very different paths. We converge every year on some kind of trip. But, you know, we often talk, you and I, about luxury and about this kind of stuff, but they are very hardcore budget. So it was a bit of a transition, you could say, for me to get into that. And if you follow me on Instagram, I know, Alex, you were horrified to see the airlines I was flying in order to get the cheapest tickets.
Look, it's not a case of being horrified. It's like fascinated, you know, admiration, and also I wouldn't get on that kind of different approach to seeing you move around in the region that you were in. But I mean, you're so familiar now, aren't you? You've lived in Southeast Asia. You are constantly in and out of the different countries that you love there. On this trip, you were in Thailand and Vietnam. What was the sketchiest? There was one airline that I quite literally, and it takes a lot for this to happen, quite literally had never heard of.
Exactly. Same here. So that was, drumroll, Viet Travel Airlines. And when I was searching for flights, we were supposed to go to Chiang Mai, which is in northern Thailand. But Thailand was,
I have been to Chiang Mai.
It's amazing.
I've been to Chiang Mai. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. So the problem was Thailand was scorching. It was like, you know, the weather said feels like. It said feels like 43 degrees. So we were after 3 days in Bangkok, we thought we can't do this anymore. Although it was amazing, it's just a bit too much. So we decided let's change plans and go to northern Vietnam, where it's like 7 degrees colder, which makes a big difference. So we were looking at first of all, it took me a lot to convince them to change flights because we already had those booked. They were very cheap but non-refundable, the Chiang Mai ones. So I was checking, all right, what is there from Bangkok to Hanoi? And then on Google Flights, I'm like, okay, Air Asia. Obviously, my preferred options were Thai Airways, number one, Vietnam Airlines, second. Both of those were like $600-$800 for three tickets. And my friends were like, when they saw Air Asia was $300, they were like, why are we flying Thai for double? But then for $180 for three people, we had an airline I had never heard of, Via Travel Airlines. And at first I thought, is this like a bus or a tour agency? What is going on? So
at first, when I had seen the side of the aircraft, the livery, I was thinking, well, that's not Vietjet. You know, so I know Vietjet, which of course kind of looks like AirAsia, doesn't it, from the outside? It's a very similar livery. This was not Vietjet. This was some kind of, it looked like a Lithuanian wet lease.
Yes, 100%. So when I Googled it, I realized, okay, it's a very new Vietnamese airline. They have three A321s, that's all. Of course, I checked the safety records. I couldn't find any even minor incidents. Of course, it's such a small airline. I don't even know if the incidents get reported. Vietnam.
Of course they do. Come on. Vietnam is one of incredibly safe in terms of an aviation sector.
Yes, it is. And they recently, a few years ago, I guess, were recategorized by, is it the FAA that categorized them so that they can fly to the US?
That is the case. Yeah, so of course it's funny. The FAA, you know, America, which is currently all over the headlines for every single flaw in commercial aviation safety, America is also the entity that looks around the rest of the world and says, we think you're safe enough now to come to these these great shores of ours, which of course sometimes is appropriate. And other times it's like, hello, have you seen what is going on in your own backyard? You
know? Yeah, totally. And we'll get to an interesting case where that's kind of changing, where they're looking more at their own airlines in a few minutes. But
yeah.
So anyway, I was slightly sketched out. We got on the flight. It was a bizarre experience. It was a former Air Berlin A321. It was cool. But it's the first flight I think I've ever taken, especially on a low-cost airline, where the crew stayed in the galley the entire flight, almost 2 hours. They didn't pop their head out to sell anything, even though they had like the biggest menu with like 30 different hot meals you could order. I didn't see the crew once. Other than that, it was fine. My friend, one of my friends
this
slept.
This sounds a little bit Iberia, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, well, true. This is the Vietnamese Iberia. One thing I'm fascinated by is people like one of my friends who can just sleep in any airplane seat. They get on and pass out, wake up when it's time to get off. I just can't do that.
That's a gift.
It is. And especially since it's a former Air Berlin plane, they're still using Air Berlin's cabins. So it's really intra-European ironing board, upright, super thin, slimline seat. And he just sits down, passes out.
Do you think sometimes, I mean, there is a benefit to knowing a lot about something. And of course, we know a lot about commercial aviation and also the whole passenger experience and all the kind of different aspects. For example, you will have been probably the only person maybe to have ever flown that airline, if it's so small, to have known properly that you were on a former Air Berlin aircraft. And to like just explain to a listener, how do you know this? I mean, I know how you know this, but how do you know this? And then is there evidence when you're in the cabin itself?
Yeah, so I have to say I felt a bit disappointed in myself because I boarded and I was first of all, but what I didn't even mention here that makes it incredibly sketch is that this airline does not exist on Flight Radar. It does not appear on the departure board, the arrival board on Flight Radar.
Red flag.
It doesn't have a logo on Flight Radar. It doesn't, nothing. Yeah, there's nothing about it. Then
does it appear on radar when you're airborne?
Yes. But
I was going to say, because it must have the ADS-B, must have the ADS-B connection, which is how aircraft become visible on flight radar.
Yeah, but there's a bunch of data missing from it. And even going, okay, this was the crazy part, going on Bangkok Airport's website, since I couldn't see it on the departure list on FlightRadar, I go there, search for departures, I put in the flight number, and it goes airline. There was no name on the airline when I searched it, and it just said destination Marsa Alam, Egypt. I was like, what? I'm flying to Hanoi, not Egypt. So much sketch leading up to it. Get on board, obviously.
Hold on. So none of this even prevents you having a conversation, maybe not with your friends, but with yourself about, should this be... I mean, so you realize that even on the airport itself... So you flew from Bangkok, didn't you?
Yeah, right,
and you're going
to Hanoi.
And it's not even on Bangkok's website in terms of being a departure. And when it does show up, it shows that it's a departure to Egypt.
Yes.
And you're fine with that. And you just...
Well, what was I supposed to do? Was I supposed to tell my friends, sorry, guys, let's just cancel everything and stay here and
I'd be questioning whether or not I've actually booked a flight that exists or in an airline that exists, or if you've been scammed or something. So were you relieved when you actually got to Bangkok Airport and you saw the departure screens point you to the check-in? I assume you went to a check-in desk.
Yeah. Of course I was. And the sketchiness continued there. So... yeah, I was just like, let's just see what happens.
Do you have a visa for Egypt, sir? Like, that's it. I'm flying to Hanoi. Yeah, do you need a visa? Oh, no, you don't need a visa for Egypt. Okay, you're good to go. But
sir,
we're going to Hanoi. Yes.
Your flight to Hanoi is via Marsa Alam, Egypt. We didn't tell you.
What the hell?
So, yeah, of course, in my mind, I'm always like, this, if nothing else, will be a great video. That's kind of the silver lining. So we get to the
opportunist,
airport.
The opportunist YouTuber, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
never not thinking about the clicks.
Yeah. So another sketchy thing at the check-in desk, they have, just as we're checking in, I look down and there's like a printout of many, many pages of A4. And on it is the name of every single passenger on the flight. But not only that, the full details of their booking. So... their booking reference, the amount they paid, their credit card numbers, all listed out, just lying there on the check-in desk. So I'm just like, okay, I recorded it for my video. I'm obviously going to blur all the info, but just like, she didn't even mind me recording that list. I was like, okay, data protection at its finest.
My God. So you know what that reminds me of? And I'm really interested now to find out if something has changed in France, because I now don't remember seeing this over the last couple of years. But until a couple of years ago, literally until maybe 2021, do you have experiences of checking in at any hotel in France and they would ask for a credit card for pre-authorization in case, you know, incidentals or whatever? And if you were to provide it, they get out a notebook and they write down everything. The long card number, the expiry date. That is business, or that at least it was until very, very, very recently, business as usual in France. And every single time I used to say, this is insane. Well, why are you writing it? No, you either pre-authorize it in the chip and pin machine or you don't take it. What if that little book is stolen? I don't understand. And by the way, this was everywhere. This was, for example, every time I was going in and out of Airbus, every hotel that I said, okay, you can have the card, or they said, no, it's a condition for you to get the room key. We need a card for pre-authorization. They'd take out like a notebook and they'd start writing 398. And I'd be like,
that's crazy.
Maybe now that doesn't exist because of data, like, you know, the way in which EU GDPR and data protection rules and laws have strengthened. But that, so to think that was happening in France just until recently, I mean, it doesn't really surprise me that it's happening with this kind of sketchy, sketchy, unknown, recently
airline.
Launched low-cost carrier, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I guess. Since it was cheaper than anything else, which is not surprising if you're flying an airline you've never heard of. But speaking of that, a couple things, I'll get back to the story, but first of all, there's so many countries in the world at check-in, both at airports and at hotels, where people just take a photo of your passport on their phone and like it. Send it somewhere. And I'm like,
I hate it.
That's not even a company phone. That's your private phone. Your background is like a picture of your kid and you're taking a photo of my passport. What are you going to do with that?
I hate it. I come to accept there was, I was at a Bloomberg conference recently and the line was really long and someone knew me who was processing and he said, I'll do your pass. Just go and wait. And I said, oh, thank you so much. Just printing. He said, show me your ID. And then I did it. And I was talking with a guy in the queue at the same time. And I felt bad that now I was going to leave the queue and be done. He was still going to be queuing. So I said to him, could you do the guy that I'm standing with as well? Just because it's... And he said, yeah, fine. I get his passport. So I had to say to the guy, do you mind if we can do your pass, just forward your passport copy to WhatsApp? He was like, yeah, sure. I said, I'm going to delete it after in front of you. I'm going to show the guy, then I'm going to delete it. He goes, oh, please. It was like, the way that this world is set up, everyone has my passport on their phones. It's just nothing that we can control anymore. And I was thinking, unfortunately, he's absolutely right. It bothers me so much, especially when people are just doing it for quick, easy responses at airports or, you know, that to get data or to get... you know, oh, this passenger wants to request his seat. Oh, who is it? And they take a picture of the passport and forward it to their manager who's in the upstairs office and so on and so on. I hate that. Just the other day, I was in a scenario where was I? And if you were under 30, you got a discount. So they said, do you have your passport with you? I said, of course, no. I don't carry my passport out and about. And I said, I've got a copy of it. Okay, great. Held it up to her so that she could verify my age and she went to take a photo of it. And I said to her, is it necessary to take a photo of it or can you just... And then she goes, oh, okay, yes, I can just see. Okay, yes, I'll process it. So I was thinking, if I didn't just ask that, that's just another pointless phone that my passport sits on. You know, as you say, her lock screen is her newborn. It's not in a work capacity. It just bothers me.
And... on that note, if you have an iPhone, guys, I don't know if you know this, Alex, but the latest update or like a very recent one, they greatly increased security in case your phone is stolen. So you can like update your security settings if the phone is stolen. So it's basically thieves won't get any value of it ever. Like it will be unusable. So I recommend updating that. One last security
I updated last tangent. Night literally Perfect. Updated in the night
good go. One more point about this tangent we're on. I saw a TikTok that I was like, this is actually good advice. I never really thought about it before, but someone said, if a hotel, when you're checking into a hotel, it's so common, I think this is especially more relevant for women, but it's so common for them to be like, okay, sir, here's your key. You're in room 772.
No. I'm good at that. I know what you're going to say.
Everyone here is what room you're in.
Yes.
This person said, if they do that, you hand them back the key and you say, give me another room, please. And do not say the room number out loud. I can read it on the keys so that no one can hear what room you're in. I think that's just a good... little note.
I try to preempt them about to do it, and he says, okay, so and I quickly interrupt and say, yep, okay, so I've got that's the room number, okay, and then close the
good
thing, because that's insane. They shout it out, as you said. Now, you know, wouldn't be as worried, but for example, if that was, as you say, a solo traveling young female standing in it, you know, that's you know, you've really got risks there, but still, I hate that. There's so much trust that our entire kind of thing of travel has. Even do you never just stand at the baggage carousel and just think, this is bizarre?
It's like grab whatever you want, literally, right?
It's just the most weirdly trusting thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, oh, you can't do this and you can't, don't you dare take over 100 mil and blah, 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 blah. Oh, but 350 people were on that aircraft and now their entire life's belongings in some scenarios are paraded in front of you for anybody to pick up and go home with.
And you just see someone's like $2,000 limited edition Remova with a first class tag on it. And you're like, you know, that would be so easy to steal for someone else. I mean, I've never been like, that's a great idea, but yeah, it's scary. And that's also why I don't carry, or why I don't really use expensive luggage, because I don't want to be a target. Yeah. I want, you know, my bag to look rough dirty, low-key, so people will be like, okay, this is probably filled with just like the cheapest clothes.
There's a new Instagram bio for you. Rough, dirty, and low-key.
So me. Okay, let's quickly get back to... I didn't even answer a question about how do we know it's an Air Berlin aircraft? How do we
figure that out? How do you know? Exactly. Yeah.
So once I got on board, once the plane landed in Bangkok, I could see the registration by seeing planes on ground. So once getting on board, I looked up the registration, and then there are several websites like Air Fleets, Plane Spotters, many different ones where you get the registration and you can see the whole history of the aircraft. So this specific one I saw was delivered 10 years ago to Air Berlin. Of course, Air Berlin went bankrupt. So yeah, it ended up there eventually in Vietnam, and that's the plane I had. But once I knew that, I was seeing the signs everywhere. It was so like, I was so blinded before, but then I was like, oh my God, that's the Air Berlin logo on the bulkhead. Wait, where it says fasten your seatbelt, life vest under your seat, that also says in German. So there were all these signs that I could have picked up on, but I guess I just had like, I was looking for that afterwards.
So you didn't find any pretzels stashed down the back of the seat or any of the Love Heart chocolates? They were delicious.
Yeah. Wow. It's a huge loss actually that we don't have Air Berlin, because that was like such a great one world airline in the heart of Europe. That could get it. And now I just feel like one world has a huge hole in continental Europe, you know?
Yeah. It's true. One World is just really IAG driven now in Europe, isn't it? And that's where we are.
Yeah.
I last flew Air Berlin about 6 months before they wrapped up ops. And I remember thinking, there's not many airlines that are kind of like this. And that's why it was a shame as to the fact that they were on their way out. Am I correct in saying they're kind of like, I know if you use this before as an example, but like a monarch of Europe, but in one world with greater reach? They just felt a little bit, it didn't feel low cost.
No, but was it supposed to be low cost?
No, but most of the airlines now that are even legacy end up feeling low cost.
Yeah. You know? So I never flew Monarch, so it's hard for me to compare, but I always felt like Air Berlin was just another Lufthansa, although Lufthansa was my favorite airline back then, I was like, you know, they're just another standard airline. I did fly them transatlantic a couple times, once in 2012, and I ended up on one of their old A330s without entertainment. So it was like a 8-hour flight from Berlin to New York without any entertainment. And as a teenager, that was like before the age of like everyone having smartphones, let alone downloading stuff on your phone. So you know, at that age, every minute feels like an eternity. So that was one of the most horrible flights of my life, just sitting there waiting, when is this over? And that was rough. I have one more story before we get into news, and this is what I've been dying to tell you, because I've never experienced this before, and it was a shocking thing for me. So
I'm ready.
When I was leaving Vietnam, I flew Hanoi to Hong Kong, a 1.5-hour flight. I was in Vietnam Airlines business class because I had said goodbye to my friends, and I thought, back to how it's supposed to be, put me in the front. Like, I need this, treat myself. So
goodbye, friends. And he leaves his backpack at the door. He takes off his dirty clothes. He puts on a fresh shirt and he runs towards the lounge.
Literally, I was like, new day, new me. Let's reset. That was literally me. I did, you know, gift them into a priority pass lounge and then said farewell. They were flying via travel back to Bangkok to then take Fly Norse.
You like low your cost
back to 12 hours to Norway. And I was just like, see you later, hasta luego, or whatever you say. So anyway, get on board. Vietnam Airlines has a fascinating old cabin, and the seats look like mustard, but that's another discussion. A321. So of course, we've spoken about this a lot as well. You check seat maps before your flight to see if the seats for example, in a business class like that, that's 2-2, will be MT next to you. Of course, that makes a huge difference. So leading up to the flight, I could see business was quite empty. My seat, the seat next to me was empty. Get on board, the seat is empty. Boarding completes, and the seat is empty. But as I'm sitting there enjoying myself, the pre-departure service was great on Vietnam Airlines. I hear a bit of commotion behind me in economy. People are moving around, and there's no cabin divider on Vietnam Airlines. So I could see everything that was going on, and people are shuffling around, changing seats. And I hear this French man, and I'm not going to do a French accent, but he's going, this older French man going, I can't sit here. And the crew go, but sir, we're offering you extra legroom seats. This is the bulkhead row. It has a great legroom. He goes, no, this is not enough. I can't sit here. And they go, sir, please, this is a chargeable seat. We're offering it for free. Please take a seat here. No, this is not enough. This won't do. I want to sit there. And he points at the seat next to me. And they're like, sir, that's business class. You can't sit here. So for 2 minutes, they're going back and forth. And eventually, they just give in and let him sit next to me.
What?
Yeah. So then...
Well, it's not just... I'm not gasping because they let him sit next to you. Sorry. They just let him because he wanted... So, a complimentary upgrade
okay, so
on board.
Here's
just
the
let
context
him upgrade.
I didn't know. So he sits down next to me. First of all, okay, before I tell you the reason he was justifying the upgrade, even when he was standing one row behind fighting with the crew, I could smell the stench of sweat and cigarette smoke in my row. It was so bad, so pungent. I was like, oh God, please don't let him sit next to me. Please don't let him sit next to me. And he comes and sits next to me.
Shit.
Smells so, so bad. Looks at me, smiles. His teeth are like rotting. I'm like, okay, this is great. But then he goes like to explain why he's sitting there. He lifts up his left pant leg and he shows that he's an amputee. So I'm like, okay. That leads to an interesting discussion, which we can have in a second. So when he sits down, the crew goes, sir, so you can sit here, but we can't, unfortunately, we can't provide you with a business class meal. And I'm like, what? He didn't even pay for a business class meal. So then they bring him a cold towel, pre-departure beverages. He ends up getting the whole business class experience and they bring him a meal anyway. So it was an interesting thing because it makes me think of discussions we've had about like when a family is traveling together and they ask you to switch seats, do you let them because of their poor planning to be a good person or do you say no, thank you? So that's one of those situations where, well, if I really don't know what's the right thing here, but I definitely think that his tone was very much expecting to get to sit in business class.
Maybe it had happened on the previous sector.
Could have happened, which would have been even crazier because that was
so there was
long
a kind of a,
from France
a precedent,
yeah,
right?
But yeah, so it was the expectation that he was going to sit there, and so he told me like he was trying to make conversation with me, and I wasn't really, you know, into talking to him that much, but he was basically like, I live in Hong Kong. I've been at home in France for several months. So I was like, if you live in Hong Kong and you've supposedly lived there for years, you know the culture in East and Southeast Asia. You know that the way you're treating this crew is going to make them extremely uncomfortable. They don't want to enter into a conflict. This is no like US, you know, flight attendant situation where they're going to fight back. He knew that. I'm pretty sure that he manipulated the situation to be like, they're going to give in eventually because the culture is that they're not going to start a fight with me.
Or maybe he was exploiting that
exactly.
part of things. I mean, okay, so this is an interesting one, kind of morally, ethically. Where is the line? Not where is the line, but how, I mean, does that mean we accommodate? Does that mean on the same aircraft they should have accommodated anyone with either a disability, perhaps a hidden disability?
Yeah.
You know, that's where it gets a bit hazy because what about the kid 10 rows behind who you know, really may have needed that extra space because of some form of hidden disability, for example? Did they check that the elderly person also at the rear of the aircraft wasn't suffering from XYZ? That's the weird part, isn't it? So because he was vocal, he was accommodated.
Yeah.
Does that mean then that the overwhelming advice, for example, if you're flying Vietnam Airlines, is that if you have something that leads you to require more space or you know, makes the confines of an aircraft cabin particularly uncomfortable because of some form of perhaps medical reason, does that mean that you simply book the lowest fare, alert the crew, and then by default you are accommodated? In aviation, it doesn't actually work like that. That's not how it works, as you know, across the sector. And passengers have a choice when they book as to how they can make that flying experience more comfortable. I'll take it on a normal, for example, a European level, which is that a lot of people are unaware that actually you can buy an extra seat. For example, if you're flying EasyJet and you book a 20 euro fare from one part of Europe to another, if they are still offering a second 20 euro fare after you have booked, you can book another ticket and the seat next to you, and you can put as the passenger name, first name empty, last name seat, and you have that booking. There is actually an official policy to follow, and it's online, and you follow that, and then you can have an extra seat for, you know, for space, yeah, for a musical instrument, for there's a whole variety of different reasons as to why. So, you know, what he did in that scenario is not precedent, is not how it works in air travel, as you know. But
yeah,
but it is an interesting one, as you say, because, I mean, look at what my reaction was the moment you said to me, and he was showing that he was an amputee. And so immediately I said, oh, okay, well, yeah, that's why. You know, so it's that gut instinct. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know?
And the whole situation sits wrong with me because I really feel like he was using that when, like, look, you're on a flight from Vietnam to Hong Kong, you're a white European from Paris, mm-hmm, who's, you could have flown direct in Air France premium economy, for example, it would have, mm-hmm, been the same seat as this, it wouldn't have been so bad. The crew offered you an extra legroom seat in economy, which actually had more legroom than the business class seat had. And think about, like, let's say a Vietnamese person was in the same situation. I doubt, because of their culture, I'm pretty much guarantee that they would not have done the same thing. So to me, it's just like such a bad look. And I'm really disappointed that the crew let him do it after also offering him extra legroom economy, because it makes me think of that expression. I think it was something like, an emergency on your part doesn't con-. Wait, no. A lack of bad planning on your part doesn't constitute an emergency on my part. Something like that.
Which is kind of what we were discussing, wasn't it, last week in the Q&A, or the week before, rather, in the Q&A about, you know, accommodating those that, yeah, haven't planned in some scenarios.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think 100% I sympathize with him and the discomfort he must experience when traveling. But at the same time, you have like 10 people sitting in business class who have paid full fare, $500 for a two-hour flight instead of $150 for economy. And then you march on board demanding that you get to sit there among all those paying passengers. So it's a tough situation. We'd love to hear what you guys
think. It's an interesting one. Yeah, if you're listening and you have thoughts on this, get in touch, even if it's not a question, because it is an interesting one that extends to many different areas of the air travel world, you know.
Yeah,
interesting. Okay, let's dive into some of what has been happening globally, and we shall begin with this interesting, well, firstly, actually, before, well, we will begin with the 320 neo issues, because this is something that we've spoken about previously. It is something that many of our listeners will be aware of. We know that across the world, A320neo operators have faced disruption due to Pratt & Whitney engine issues, right? These have been ever since Dan and I met. When Dan and I met for the very first time, Lufthansa's first ever A320neo delivery, we were sat with the Pratt and Whitney team who were saying, yeah, it's going to be 6 weeks until we fix it. And that was however many, I mean, a decade ago, something like that.
Nearly anyway, 10 years ago.
Almost 10 years ago, right? And still, there are airlines that are going to be cutting capacity this summer because of the issues. That's on Airbus's side. On Boeing's side, everyone's very familiar with what's happening right now in the US with production at Boeing. They are under several different investigations. There are different investigations happening in different jurisdictions. And in addition to that, we have airlines that are not going to be receiving aircraft as planned due to the way in which Boeing is now having to press pause on certain things. The overwhelming kind of what this all kind of equates to is that this year, airlines will receive 20% fewer aircraft than what they had expected due to the issues at both Airbus and Boeing. 20% fewer aircraft. So these are airlines that are forward planning by selling you tickets a year in advance. And now a significant portion of that route network, that schedule that they have published and sold to you, the fare-paying passenger, in some scenarios, they will simply be unable to deliver because of the way in which they are not receiving aircraft. So globally, the picture is 20% fewer. If we zoom into the US, US airlines will receive 32% fewer aircraft than what they had planned, which again is only going to equate into cuts to the schedules, flight cancellations this summer, and so on and so on. And you traveling around, for example, in Thailand and perhaps in Vietnam, but where were you seeing all of these parked NEOs?
Yeah, so I saw a few in Thailand, but actually the majority, they're all over Hanoi Airport, like everywhere on one side of the runway, like in the grass, there are Vietjet A321 NEOs. There are Vietnam yeah. Airlines A321 NEOs, Bamboo Airways. Like there's so many parked everywhere. Everything is covered. And the thing is that almost 700 aircraft are going to be grounded this month due to these issues. A320 NEOs, A220s, a couple Embraer 190s. But it's unbelievable. 700 of the most fuel efficient new aircraft are on the ground. And all people are talking about is Boeing's issue. But this is a huge separate issue. Like this is pretty much the same impact as the 737 MAX grounding in 2019 in terms of number of aircraft on the ground.
It's an issue that has been present everywhere but will really manifest once again this summer, and that is because of the way in which airlines had expected these issues to have been resolved by now. There are so many carriers that have come forward that are affected by this. Aegean, what has become almost the national airline of Greece, have said that they have reached a compensation agreement with Pratt and Whitney over the disruption with their A320neo family aircraft, and that those discussions continue and so on and so on. But compensation is one thing. Compensation doesn't actually mean quick fix or even real fix solutions for aircraft that can then perform as expected. So it's here that you quickly see, okay, if, for example, you see the headlines about Michael O'Leary, Ryanair CEO, warning about a summer of disruption, if you hear about how airlines will be unable to meet their targets this summer with blah, 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 blah. This year, this time around, most of it stems to these issues that both manufacturers are facing.
Yeah, to me, it's also crazy. So I was reading about the efficiency of the different engines. Pratt & Whitney's engine is supposedly, correct me if I'm wrong, a little bit more fuel efficient than CFM's engine on the A320neo. But of course, that doesn't matter if your aircraft can't even fly, if they're grounded. And we're not talking about a short grounding. I think the wait time to get the issues resolved and get a new engine or whatever they need to do with Pratt & Whitney is almost a year, right?
Yeah, it is. And even when Pratt & Whitney tend to declare an aircraft engines as fixed, updated, you know, rectified, airlines have told me that actually that's not the end of it, that there's still ongoing maintenance updates that are required as Pratt & Whitney grapple with the same issue that they have had since you and I met.
Yeah, so basically it's not helping anyone. It's not helping the airlines that the engine is a bit more efficient. It's not helping the environment because airlines are having to keep around old A320s, previous generation, to compensate for this engine not working properly. And another thing, I'm surprised we are still seeing airlines order or commit to the Pratt & Whitney engine, but we have...
But
we have huge airlines like Indigo, one of the biggest Airbus customers these days, low-cost airline in India, having shifted. So they originally ordered their first batch of A320s with Pratt & Whitney engines, but given the ongoing problems, they have now chosen to go over to the other engine option, CFM, for future deliveries. So, you know, that's...
But we're seeing these decisions. It is a good decision, but we're seeing these decisions made now in 2024 that airlines were making back in 2014, which just goes to show the sheer length of time that has passed that Pratt has faced these issues. Remember, we met on that Lufthansa A320neo delivery because Lufthansa became the launch customer by default when Qatar Airways pulled out of being the launch customer of the A320neo because at the time, the former CEO of the airline, Akbar Albakr, knew that the engine had issues and he said, nope, we are not going to be launching the Pratt & Whitney engine that is going to have issues in an ordinary climate, let alone the hot, dusty Middle East. And so they didn't become the launch customer. They converted their order to 321neos and their, of course, supplier is not Pratt & Whitney. They're going for the CFM LEAP. So
good.
Those were decisions taken a long time ago. And here we are now, same thing.
Same issue. Another
same issue.
Yeah, let's talk about some other issues in the industry.
Okay, Dan, this caught my eye. This was on the One Mile at a Time website. Is priority security illegal in Germany? That's what a German lawyer is suggesting, that apparently, in a nutshell, it's illegal because it's a federal requirement, right, to go through security, and therefore there are rules in which everybody is treated equally in something that is mandatory and federal law. And so if you are jumping the queue by having business class, fast track, Star Alliance, Gold, Senator, Hon, Circle member, or whatever all these things are, then you are potentially violating the equality laws of Germany, where under German law, everyone is considered equal when it comes to participating in a mandatory public task. Did you see this? What do you think?
I don't know what I think. I, of course, selfishly, I'm like, yeah, priority security is great. Of course, we should still have it. At the same time, I see the argument. I'm very surprised that we have priority security in Sweden, because Sweden is even more about equality than Germany, at least the feeling I get. But of course, I wouldn't like to see this happen. You know, I would like to see priority security remain. I think there are some interesting questions about what would banning priority security mean for politicians or for celebrities or people, because surely some people
What about that
need
service
it.
That you do at Frankfurt Airport?
Yeah.
You do the whole...
Frankfurt Airport VIP services. That's also paying, you know, a lot
you
more than you would for just a priority ticket.
Yeah.
There would be so many questions, and I feel like there are bound to be exceptions to that rule. And in those cases, who decides what the exception is? Who decides who can rightfully use it and who cannot? I feel like it makes things so much more complicated than just saying who paid for it and who didn't, you know?
I also feel like this guy was stuck in a long queue. Okay.
No, totally.
And everybody just kept passing by. I mean, it was probably on a day you and I were there, and one after the other, you know, we were flashing the One World status or whatever, the Star Alliance status, and passing this dude who is now trying to bring down priority security across Germany. And not you know, not if the on-air podcast has anything to do with it, buddy. So we'll
be having a word with,
yes,
with some German officials.
We've consulted our legal team and we'll have further updates. It's funny because sometimes the whole, you know, the ultra of the IP, so not the kind of fast track queues, but as you say, the ultra VIP, which is used by government ministers and so on and so on, such as, for example, what the royal family use at Heathrow. So Heathrow VIP, the Windsor Suite. So last time I did the Windsor Suite on departure at Heathrow, I mean, people think, okay, that's going to be so glamorous. So yeah, okay, you got in a car all the way across to Terminal 4, which took forever because one of the taxiways was closed. So going from Terminal 5 to Terminal 4, I think I was in the car for about 22 minutes.
Mm.
And then, in order to board the aircraft, walk up this fire escape and into the kitchen of Terminal 4 and through the kitchen and like, excuse me, sorry, yeah. Oh, mind that hot soup just passing me, yeah? I'm serious.
Grab and a then, few samples along the way.
Well, you know me and hygiene and OCD stuff. Me seeing the kitchen didn't do much to put faith in purchasing or consuming food at Heathrow. I know. I mean, it wasn't as bad as I thought, but still, it's just not something that I should be taken there. Yeah, because you know what I'm like and overthinking that kind of stuff. Anyway, so go through the kitchen and then like out this fire exit door of the kitchen, which is adjacent to the gate that I was boarding. And I remember there was like a backpacker on his phone using a charger opposite. And he looked like, and obviously we're being escorted by the Heathrow VIP team and straight through. And he looked like, what the hell? Like, why did, like, I could see him kind of adjust his neck to check, isn't that a kitchen? You know, but that's how it is always. So anyway, the reason I was saying that is because to the lawyer guy in Germany who's stuck in that queue, look, it's not always as not always glamorous, buddy. So maybe it was better off where you were in the queue. And also, not all German airports have it, do they? For example, Frankfurt Airport security, the security by the gates for the non-Schengen internationals spring to mind. That is awful. And they are the ones that take out your whole life of your bag and then leave them and say, thank you. And then you have to stand there and pack for an hour.
Do they even say thank you? I don't think they do.
No, they don't say thank you. I thought as I said it, they don't say, yeah.
But some parts at Frankfurt Airport do have priority for people with status or
I think it's mostly in the Schengen areas.
Yeah.
But those gates, you know the gates I'm talking about, right? For example, when you're flying to Doha from Frankfurt and you've got flights to Doha and to Saudi
Oh, yes, because that is now from the other terminal. I always forget if it's terminal one or two.
I think it's one, yeah. Which is, you know, security is just before those gates. And you have to decide, are you going to go to the gates where there's nothing? Or are you going to stay before security where there's basically still nothing, but there's supposedly something? God, I hate Frankfurt Airport. Goodness
Well,
me.
You need to try VIP services. It makes it a whole lot nicer, I'll tell you. But
I'll do it when I have this guy's email address and we can send him a photo.
Exactly. Yeah, it's an interesting discussion as well. Our opinions are obviously, we're no legal experts, so we can't say if it's actually illegal. I just feel like this is some like bitter guy who didn't want to pay for. I mean, also, this is not only rich people. This is people who have to sometimes fly a lot in economy class for work. They're flying like every week in some horrible intra-European ironing board economy class, and you're trying to deny them a little bit more comfort so that they at least don't have to stand in security for 30 minutes
don't have to,
in order to make the German economy go around. Like,
Don't have to arrive 2.5 hours before for example, for a domestic German flight where they're commuting home or they're commuting. There's so many people that commute across the Schengen area to and from work by plane. You know, it's naive to still paint aviation as this kind of sexy elitist. Oh, you know, that's because that's for... No, there's, as you say, there's people grafting. There's people there because that's, you know, that's their work and so on. Speaking of queues, pleased to announce this week that Delta have updated their boarding process. Hooray! US carrier, they've updated their boarding process. So as of May 2024... Delta will be making these changes to their boarding process. The reason it's headliney is because they have reduced the number of boarding groups for the aircraft. So now there's only 901 and basically, which is more boarding groups than there are passengers. And so basically now...
Everyone is in their own boarding group.
And their friend who is not on the flight. So now, first, customers who need more time or assistance will be invited to board. Followed by active military members, followed by Delta 360 members, followed by Delta One customers, or Delta First Class customers, followed by Delta Diamond Medallion members and Delta Premium Select Cabin for certain aircraft, followed by Early Access, which is customers traveling with car seats and strollers, followed by all passengers in Zone 3, Delta Comfort Plus, Zone 4, Delta Sky Priority, Platinum and Gold Medallions, Flying Blue Platinum and Gold, Virgin Atlantic, Flying Club Gold, Sky Team Elite Plus, LATAM, Pass, Black Signature, Black Platinum Elite, WestJet Rewards Platinum and Gold Elite, followed by Zone 5, Main Cabin 1 for Delta, WestJet, Flying Blue, Virgin Atlantic, Flying Club Silvers, Delta Corporate Travelers, Delta Sky Miles Guard, Platinum Reserve, Amex, SkyTeam Elite, LATAM Gold Plus and Elite, followed by Zone 6, all passengers in Main Cabin 2, followed by Zone 7, all passengers in Main Cabin 3, followed by Zone 8, those passengers who have purchased a basic economy class fare, followed by cats, dogs, insects, lice, sand grains, and cockroaches, and because cockroaches will be the last living things on the earth when the world ends. So, by the way, none of that was a joke. Okay, apart from the insects bit, none of that was a joke.
Can I just say,
this is nuts.
Yeah, can I just say, having just, or, you know, spending 2 weeks in Asia, mainly Southeast Asia, you board a flight in 30 minutes, a wide body, a 777, you board in 30 minutes, and they go business class and economy. That's how it works. Everyone goes on board, very orderly, lines up, doesn't block the aisle, super efficient, and you're ready to go on time. I don't know how this helps. I know that, you know, not all cultures are as geared for efficiency. That's normal. But
it's being polite.
Exactly. But it's just like, how does this help? Like, why don't you just make it priority and economy? Make it two groups and just figure it out.
Even British Airways have fallen victim to this. So they're worried at BA that there's too many people who qualify for group one, right? So group one would typically be those that are in business class and those that have elite status. So, for example, BA Executive Club Gold or the One World Emerald equivalent. Okay. Because there are so many frequent flyers flying BA, they've now introduced group zero.
Yeah.
So now there's zero and then one, two, three, and four. And then they were worried that they were all the BA frequent flyers were complaining to BA that when you go to outstation airports, for example, if you're flying from Madrid to Heathrow, sometimes they get lazy because, of course, their priority is to board the aircraft, not just to sit here and stroke everybody's ego. They will announce, we're now boarding groups 1 to 3, and the group ones were furious. Yes. Yeah, you
it's
know.
The same in Gothenburg. They just don't even do priority. Not surprising. They just go, okay, everyone's welcome to board, and chaos ensues.
Yeah, it's mad. And then also you get I find people are so touchy about it as well, especially on BA. The amount of times I've been, for example, with my family and we're standing for boarding and we would board with group one because I have One World Emerald and also because I'd probably need the locker space. Otherwise, believe me, I would be the happiest person ever to board absolutely last. Boarding first, I don't see how it's even sold as some kind of benefit if you have no requirement to have the space in the overhead locker. And then the tap on the shoulder, excuse me, sorry, I'm group one, the guy behind me says. And I look at him and I say, great, so you're in the right place. Yeah, which is also behind me.
Okay, it's well not, done, you know. Yes.
Yeah, let me just check. He says, excuse me, I'm group. I'm like, oh, good, because I wouldn't want anyone who's group two behind me. So you're in the right place, buddy. You know, like, somehow insinuating that
maybe, you shouldn't be there.
Oh, God, honestly. So anyway, now BA have stroked the egos of the gold guest list who are the top tier frequent flyer for British Airways Executive Club specifically. They will now board with group.
They all get groped.
What a slip of the tongue, goodness me. With group zero. And I think that's something that has gone down quite well with them because now they don't have to have One World Emeralds boarding at the same time as them. But I can't wait to see this in actual action because I know how lazy the staff are at Malaga, for example, who board the BA flights. They're going to go like this. They're going to say, group zero, group one, before anyone can kind of even have stood up, you know? So
See that. It's
bizarre.
It is, as you said, it's mainly about rewarding people who are paying more by stroking their egos. Because when you have so many groups, there's no real benefit to being group three instead of group five. It's just like you paid slightly more or you're sitting in this seat, so you get to be group three. You know, you have this status, so silver gets to board before, you know, this other person, and then you feel special. It's just unnecessary. Unless the overhead lockers are going to be full in the US, that is a problem. So
yeah, priority everywhere is a problem.
Yeah,
everywhere it's a problem.
And I was surprised because somehow in my mind, I'm like, that's not a problem in the Middle East. Like, I'm like, Qatar Airways doesn't have that problem. But then I was texting you, flying their their 737 MAX.
You wish you were on an A3 something.
I know. Flying it the other week, and they didn't know what to do because the overhead lockers were full, but they really don't want to gate check bags. So that was also
that's
quite
because everyone's
chaotic.
Connecting, so they don't want to gate check. I remember having to take Air Nostrum to Madrid all the time to get out of Spain, and you can only really leave out of Madrid if it's going to be long haul. And the amount of times the crew, even though I was in business, fake business, Air Nostrum business, would try to gate check my hand luggage, and I'd be like, nope, you cannot. This is a part of the whole business class thing. And if there's going to be one perk, then at least let it be that. Interestingly enough, do you know for the first 2 years, Air Nostrum banned Bluetooth earphones? And if you popped AirPods into your ears during the flight, they would come over and make such a scene as if you just jeopardized the entire safety of the flight.
Yeah.
But if you flew on Iberia mainline, it was all right.
Aviation rules sometimes are very funny.
It's so weird, isn't it? Let's look at Asia. Well, we've been very Asia-centric the whole podcast, but let's look at another development. Cathay Pacific are removing first class from their Boeing 777s, and that is because they're preparing for their new business class. So they're eliminating first class with the business class coming soon. It's the one that we spoke about previously announced. Nothing too exciting, kind of sensible, not too revolutionary, very similar to what they have now, reverse herringbone, just an updated version. It's the Aria suite. It looks chic, it looks smart, but I think the decision is interesting as well because here is another airline ripping out first class of the existing cabin in space for business class. But Cathay Pacific will eventually introduce a new first class. That's going to be what's the name of the suite, the first class suite that Cathay's hit?
I'm not sure. We haven't seen it yet, but some of the mock-ups.
I know what it is. It's the, I nearly called it the Angel Suite. It's not the Angel Suite. It's the Halo Suite.
Okay, but we don't know what it will be like.
But we don't know what it looks like, and that's only going to be on the Boeing 777-9, the 777X, which of course hasn't been certified yet.
I have seen some mock-ups that look absolutely insane, next level, truly. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw one that's like a almost like a bunk bed type of thing, except so you have your seat like downstairs and then you go up and have a full length comfortable bed with a real mattress above it. Those types of I've just seen the most amazing I've seen like somewhere, so you have like a bunk bed, but you can combine two seats into one like huge living room on a 777X, and the seats would be like a single aisle on a 777X. I'm so excited to see what they come up with. I really hope some of those mock-ups are correct because that would be amazing. But yeah, as Alex is saying, this leaves some question marks as to, in the meantime, what happens to their first class when they're removing it, and we don't know when the 777X will be ready. Right now, things aren't looking too good for Boeing getting that certified anytime soon.
And with that, we have some questions similar to this topic, so let's move into Q&A. David is asking if we can speak a little more on what has happened with United and them being forbidden to expand internationally now due to the FAA review.
Okay, this is interesting. It goes back to what we spoke about earlier in the episode, how there's increased scrutiny in the US, obviously, given recent developments. United, we spoke about this a couple weeks ago as well, has had a series of incidents that most of them haven't been too dangerous. It's just a combination of increased media scrutiny and people being paranoid and more attention on safety. So the FAA is trying to show they care and step it up. So they've put United under investigation to make sure they are properly maintaining their planes and whatnot. So part of that is that United is not allowed to launch any new international routes during that time. And luckily for United, they expanded hugely internationally last year. In the past couple of years after COVID, they launched a lot of new routes. So many of those are seeing equipment upgrades or frequency boosts, but they had two new routes for this summer that were supposed to launch. One being Newark to, I think, Faro in Portugal, and the other being Cebu, Philippines to Tokyo, which is a funny route, but United has a hub in Guam, so they operate all types of triangle routes or tagons in the region.
That was a Fifth Freedom, wasn't it? Yeah. That was a Fifth Freedom between Tokyo and Cebu.
Yeah. So both of those routes have now been postponed until summer 2025, according to the airline. But it is interesting to see real-life consequences, following the safety development.
And of course, the reason why the FAA is increasing its oversight of United is what they say is to ensure that the airline is complying with safety recs, but also that they are actively identifying hazards and mitigating risks, managing all of this safely. The FAA specifically said, quote, that certification activities in process may be allowed to continue, but future projects are now delayed based on findings from oversight. We know that there have been a string of different hiccups across United. There was, do you remember I read that long list, that bizarre list of what had happened at United over the last 4 weeks? A lot of it on Boeing aircraft, but not all. And, there's just this feeling, isn't there, right now, of, those things are not going. There's all different kinds of different safety flaws being exposed, specifically with US aviation. So the FAA has hit pause on expansion here. And that's typically what happens when they place an airline under review, and that's what happens with United. So hopefully that answered your question, David.
Yusuf says, hi Dan, love the podcast. It's the thing I look forward to most every Wednesday. By the way, just quick tangent to this. I don't know about you, but I'm genuinely shocked when I realize that people actually listen to the podcast. Like, I know people listen, but
thousands and thousands listen.
Yeah, but I was just so shocked, like, when we didn't post last week and I got so many messages from people being like, Dan, I missed the podcast. I sent you so many screenshots of these sweet messages.
Yeah.
Like, thank you so much, guys. It made us so, so happy.
It's amazing.
So to continue Yusef's question, he says, I wanted to ask about oversold flights. Why would an airline sell more seats than what they have and end up paying compensation to those who are bumped? Doesn't that beat the point of maximizing the profit through sales?
Well, basic airline economics is that the airlines need to make sure that every flight is as full as possible, right? And having the flight as full as possible maximizes their chances of that flight being profitable. So the airlines cover themselves by overselling on routes, and there's really sophisticated levels of data that show how they can oversell without being in a situation where they're constantly having to bump and then compensate passengers. So if you look at it as a trade-off, more often than not, statistically, they are able to oversell and not have to bump because statistically X number of passengers miss their flight, miss their connection, don't show up, and so on and so on. So when you look at it that way, that it's still worth doing that than, for example, worrying about the cost of having to compensate bumped passengers. And believe me, if airlines were the ones having to constantly swallow the bill for a constant stream of compensation for bumping passengers, they wouldn't be overselling. It wouldn't make airline economic sense, and therefore they wouldn't be doing it. So the fact that they are doing it is because it continues to make sense to oversell. And that's why airlines overbook. It's not anything malicious. It's an economic way to maximize revenue and ensure flights are full. And no shows are routine, as are flexible ticket holders who may, decide not to travel on that flight at the last minute and so on.
Yeah. So in conclusion, it comes down to an advanced algorithm telling airlines what makes most sense. It's not just like, oh, let's sell this many seats. It's based on previous patterns of people missing flights and stuff like that. I have another question here from Venkat. I think that's how you pronounce it. He says, huge fan of the podcast. I have a question about Emirates. Basically, Why they only have two aircraft, 777s and A380s, isn't that a huge waste of resources for smaller routes or empty flights? Shouldn't a company like Emirates have smaller planes for smaller routes?
Well, they did, didn't they? They had A330s. They haven't had single aisles. But Emirates' fleet, as you say now, is dominated by the 777 and the A380s, meaning it's not perfect, as you can guess, on some of these slimmer, thinner routes that don't have that mass market demand or certainly don't have the demand to fill up something like an A380. But in order for them to remain agile and respond to the need to increase frequencies, the need to be able to adapt to flying to secondary markets and so on, Emirates is taking delivery soon of their first batch of Airbus A350s. So that's definitely an aircraft, because they're taking the A350-900, the smaller of the two variants, something that's going to enable them to be a little more agile in responding to those slimmer, thinner routes. And that's always, I think, the territory that Emirates has been in terms of wide bodies. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, it comes down to efficiency. It comes down to the routes they serve. Sometimes they're okay with having M-tier flights because they can fill it with cargo. There's always a lot of cargo coming in and out in the Middle East. But, you know, in the future, we'll see them, downgrading some of their aircraft types to offer less capacity. They outsource smaller routes to fly Dubai. That's just the model they have chosen.
And fly Dubai's sister ship with Emirates here is incredibly important, because Fly Dubai operate many, many routes that are slimmer and thinner that Emirates do not. And that's why Emirates are able to pass on that to responsibility to its sister, Fly Dubai. And so it kind of makes nice sense there. But of course, Fly Dubai themselves will be entering into the wide body market world soon after orders that they placed earlier last year. And that's simply to increase capacity, not because they want to contradict Emirates' strategy, but because they know that if they're able to fill up an aircraft of 180 seats, they know on some routes they can do that if their aircraft had 300 seats or 350 seats and so on and so on. So it's good. And we always keep an eye on what is happening in the Gulf, because it is one of the beating hearts of global aviation and an incredibly 100%. Important market.
Yeah. We have so many more questions. I'm just going to end with this. A message from Khalil, which was so sweet. He says, well, last week when we didn't have an episode, he says, tragic, Wednesday ruined. love the podcast. So basically his question is, what are our thoughts on frequent flyer programs moving to spend-based earning instead of distance-based earning? Isn't this going to intrinsically lead to accelerated points inflation? And we'll see economy class tickets going for 1 million points in our lifetime.
I will let you take this one, because this is definitely your area. I mean, I have an opinion on it, but I'm interested. More interested to hear from you.
So I think there's two layers to this. Of course, it's interesting because I think Khalil is also asking two separate questions. In terms of earning points, it's difficult because the airlines, of course, want to reward people who spend the most. So the more you spend, logically, the more points you should earn. So in that sense, offering spend-based points earning is the most sensible thing. On the other hand, there is something to be said about gamifying your frequent flyer program a bit and offering, you know, sweet spots where people who really want to learn about it and geek out can do it to earn status easier, to get extra points by doing this or this trick. And I think that if airlines remove that entirely, it disincentivizes people from engaging with the program and trying to find those little hacks. So for me, I think there's a sweet spot. I think you can, you know, maybe at least lower earnings for cheaper fares without going completely spend-based, or making the program so that it does incentivize higher spend, but also leave some of those little tricks so that people can earn status by being clever and reading about it. Because, you know, the more you engage with something, the more you're going to care about it, the more you're going to ultimately be, you know, passionate about engaging with it and the airline. So that's a bit tricky. And then, you know, I think his second question is kind of asking, if we see spend-based redemptions. So, for example, Qantas just rolled out a spend-based redemption option. So the points price changes based on the ticket price. That is a double-edged sword. Of course, yeah, if the economy ticket is super expensive, then the points ticket will be super expensive as well. But sometimes, especially I think for redeeming for economy class, the points tickets are actually much worse value than paying cash. So in some instances, when a cash ticket, let's say it's on sale, there's something super cheap. Using Qantas as an example, let's say you want to fly from Sydney to Perth, there's a cash sale, you'll then be able to redeem less points. So what's good about Qantas, what I like about how they've implemented it, is that they're keeping regular awards as well. So when there is award space, although Qantas has very, very, very bad award space, but when there is, you can redeem and get some sweet spots. But when there isn't, you can also pay cash or pay points with a cash equivalent and sometimes get a good deal, but also sometimes get a really bad deal.
I think people should sign up to your masterclass.
I do think they should.
And then they don't have to worry about any of that and they can let you do all of it. Right?
Well, that's not really how it works, but they'll learn how to become masters at doing all this stuff as well. So I agree.
Good. Well, by the way, it was lovely to see you last week.
Yes. You did. We haven't even spoken about that.
But yeah, yeah, it was great to see you. Great. We had nice pizza. I hope it was
great
all right.
To meet your dad. That was fun.
Yes. Yes. We enjoyed it. It was really nice. We had a good evening with you. And, you know, it's always sweet that you say to me, oh, yeah, it's fine. You know, I have until about 9:30 p.m. and then I'm going to need to go to bed because I've got an early start. And then it's just such a big mistake to tell me that because I'm like, so dinner at 9:30?
Literally. And then you always have a backup friend ready. So you're like, Dan will actually go to bed at 10. So I'm going to invite my other friend every single time to meet up at 10. And I'm like, how late are you out? Like, doesn't make sense to me.
Firstly, he was with us, so it's not a backup. I was seeing him anyway, and then of course you ambushed me, so I'm like, okay, we merge them together. No, but
I don't think that's how it works.
The late nights have been because it's been Ramadan, so the only time to see people has been late at night. But
every other time I've been there, it has not been Ramadan, and you've been like, okay, you're going to bed, it's 10, all right, well, let me call up this person and we're gonna
call up. I say to you, okay, well, you know, just because you're going to bed doesn't mean I am. Perhaps I have other plans, which has been the case. By the way, plans that you're more than welcome to join, but you don't because you decide. But anyway, I don't know why I'm arresting you because you did stay up late on this occasion. You did do well. And then I let you go at, 11 something or midnight or whatever it was. Anyway, it was good to see you and good to record with you as ever on this Wednesday episode of On Air. Thank you, and feel free to write in with your questions, your thoughts on anything that we've said, or potential talking points, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Yes. Until then, wait, that's not what we say here. That's what I say on All Subtitles, I say fly safe. But we will see you all next week on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.